from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, environmentalist and policy-oriented social change advocate, Nishad Shafi.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Mantra Americana. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am excited about today's show. I was trying to, like, as we bring people together to the Life Changes Show, as we have come together at the Life Changes Show, all with our different understandings of the world, all with our different cultures, all with our different desires for ourselves, our families, and the planet, we have created this space where we can have conversations that truly matter and that help propel us together as one. Hopefully, and that is the plan, we trust that is happening, into our future. And so as I was looking at today's guests that have gathered and have wanted to be here, I thought, this is really interesting. How does this come together? Well, we have as our guest an environmentalist and policy-oriented social change advocate. Well, interestingly enough, our performance guest is the band Mantra Americana, and they're about culture, they're about collective, they're about bringing cultures together, they're about sharing. Well, we'll let them tell you more, but the point in all of this is that I'm making is that I was bringing it all together in my mind, and then one of our performance guests brought it all home for me by saying the following. He said, Filippo, in an email, I have had a 20-year career as a solo artist, but now I want to speak to the importance of collaboration and its pleasures and epiphanies. And so he didn't want to come on by himself. He wanted to bring on more people than who are going to be on today. We've got three of them, but the others weren't available. But already it just shows that the voices are important and necessary, and you'll hear it in the show today how each of our voice matters and how the voices coming from different cultures and different backgrounds, and also that we are here together with interests in moving things forward for the better of all. I'm excited about that.
This is the heart of what Life Changes Network has always been about. I love the thoughts you shared in the monologue and the conversations we're going to have today. But that's the like in our latest logo version, the overlapping circles, the connecting the dots, the creative collaboration, you know, the movement back to living as our individual notes within this orchestral symphony of oneness. And starting to understand how to be unique, but a unique aspect of a much larger musical piece.
Nice. Well, at the top of the show, I want to thank contributing producer Allison Goldwyn for introducing us to our interview guest, who is an environmentalist and policy-oriented social change advocate and so much more. Welcome, Nishad Shafi, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. Thank you, Filippo. It's a great honor to be here along with Mark. Thank you for that gracious introduction. Would love sharing some of my perspectives and experience with you today.
Well, and thank you for that. Let's start with something. You are in Qatar. You are from Qatar, and in America, we don't necessarily know a lot as a culture about the Middle East. And what we do know, at least in the past, before Dubai came into our consciousness, we knew petro the petro economy, and we saw rubble on TV. And so please help enlighten us more in this new day of the wonderful aspects that we need to know. Some of them.
This region is moving away from being a petrol state towards a better environmental based economy, more environment friendly economy, and racing from rebels to one of the big metropolitan cities in the world. So gone are those days. This region has been known for some of the many aspects in the Western world. I think it is now our responsibility to showcase some of the great things happening, myself from environment perspective, from cultural perspective, how this region is emerging as one of the leaders in both, whether it's culture or environment.
Thank you for that. And you've worked with, and you still work with, a lot of youth. And so from the youth perspective, on the one hand, it'd be nice to know that we're all the same. Like at the moment, we have grown up wanting to consume and to have the latest fashion and to you know where I'm getting with this conversation. So if we are all that, and at the same time, if we all need to potentially change together, tell us about the youth of the Arab world.
This is something which motivated us many years back, at least should we say 5 years back, to start the Arab Youth Climate Movement Qatar, to really showcase what young people from Qatar or the Arab region are aspiring to see beyond petrol fossil economy, beyond all the rebels you mentioned, to a world we aspire to live in prosperity in an environment friendly way. Given that, due to the excessive wealth accumulated during the petrol era, a lot of wealth came in this part of the world that also changed the people's, or especially young people's, behavior as well. What we are trying to do through our organization is to build that consciousness. See, Arab Youth Climate Movement is working on reawakening the humanity's consciousness. This is not something we don't know, but we lost in all this extraordinary things we got in a very short time. People really went away from reality to a different world. So what we want trying to do is to build that new generation of young people whose minds can be really changed, or we can push them because they are the next generation who will be running this country, living here in this part of the world. So we wanted to target them, looking at the behavioral change, how within our ecosystem we can push for that change. This is very important if you look at the environment perspective. That's why we pushed climate and environment as a top priority for young people, not just because from the our consumption of resources, but also the impacts of climate change is very severe in this part of the world, whether you take it water resource availability and also local resource. When we talk about resource consumption, we need to underline the fact 90% of our food and other products come from other countries. 95% are from imported, because our temperature and weather system doesn't make us easily to cultivate. Even we use latest technologies, super expensive, rather than you depend on other countries. So that makes us our consumption habit, if you go at this rate, will not only cause economic issues in the coming future, but also excessive waste also is causing environmental degradation. So interlinkage of both this economy and the mindfulness living, we try to bring sort of that young people through our community-oriented programs where we talk to them, host them, train them, provide workshops. Within our system, when I say our system, is how we as a young people in our part of the world look like. We wanted to try to bring a new narrative of how we should live a life, and not exactly copy-pasting something from a very Western-oriented. Things may work there, but may not work here. So this is where Arab Youth Climate Movement had its own niche way of doing things, connecting culture, religion, and environment together.
So Right. Actually, you went right where I was going to go. So we are connected. When you mentioned the food and the resources and all that, we are connected to each other, all of us on the planet, and especially in regions where certain things are not possible. And yet at the same time, we have different cultures, different religions that are predominant in the various countries. So tell us, I understand this, you can't just copy paste something that's potentially, hopefully working someplace else. You have to work, we all have to work with the cultures and the understandings, the belief systems. And so how does Islam work with environmentalism, or environmentalism work with Islam, the religion?
So, I mean, like every religion, which has been, whether it's Hinduism, Islam, Christianity, all religion had its own way of protecting environment, which is very much written or documented in all the manuscripts. What we as a religious country have forgotten even that part of life. So what we tried was to how interlink Islamic teaching of environment to our daily life. So whether it's some of the verses from the Quran, some of the experts or theologists who speak about the intersection between environment and Islamism, we try to organize something called eco-literacy program. So ideally the program was very concentrated to mosque, which is where we in Islam, Muslim place of prayer. And the program was called eco-literacy for imams. Imams are the priests at the mosque. So what we tried was to actually use the science of climate with the preaching and teaching of the Islamic culture, Islamic theology, or Islamic book like Quran and affiliated documents, which has been documented historically, to connect with the modern science and showcase to this priest at the mosque that why don't you use after the prayer time to talk to disciples who comes to the mosque to a congregation and to talk to them about environment and why we need to be very environment friendly. So this program was ideally a way of bringing believers, or when I should say a religiously predominant country like Qatar, to talk about the intersection between Islam and environment, how the Prophet Muhammad, who used to be very mindful of how we should use our resources, those are very well documented. We try to bring those narrative again to the people that it's not just the prayers you do. Everything you do with environment also has to do with your religion. And these are very closely interconnected. So we hosted during Ramadan, the last Ramadan here in Doha, the holy month of Ramadan, we had an expert who came to speak about why Islam was always an environment-friendly religion like all other religion, and why as Muslims and the followers of Islam really have to bring environment also to the forefront of their day-to-day life. So this was the idea of how we connect our religion to our daily life, which also includes being an environment-friendly individual. This is something I've not much tried. There are many faiths working on environment. I think recently United Nations Environment Program also do acknowledge the power of faith and faith in supporting environment and climate change action. So we are looking on that front, how Islam can be that intersection to do action. And it is not restricted. Being Qatar is a very inter-religious country. We have people from all the faith, and we invite everybody. It's not that we restrict to people. Open events are for everybody, but the imam training program, which is eco-literacy for imams, are very much close to the mosque.
So you say we need to move into a more conscious society. So this seems to me that this is one aspect of making that happen. And what are some of the other ways where we could be moving into a conscious society?
Well, see, making people believe that environmental change would have a devastating impact, if not seen today, which I already seen, nevertheless, I wouldn't say. But for people like us who will have to live a life in next 40, 50 years, unlike my parents or my predecessors, will not be have to face those. So we thought, starting with the community, making them aware that your every action matters. And the same time, getting in dialogue with our governments, who are the real policy makers, who are the who makes the changes that comes with the highest level of impact. So what we do is at the same time, leveraging the community voices, we tried another arm to work with our governments, closely following up their national climate change negotiations, national climate action plans, national climate adaptation plans, and resilience plans. We want to involve our young people, because some of the plans they're actually making today is all about us. Our leaders will not be alive, or we don't know, in the next 30, 40 years. So what we are trying to do is sort of doing the two actions at the same time, building a very strong, knowledgeable community, making them consciousness of being a very, environment-friendly citizens of the earth. Because one of the thematic of Islamic thought house is that every human being is a steward of the earth. So we want to build that as a knowledge for our community and people here, at the same time, bridging this gap between policy and how community voices should be a part of the narrative of government planning their policies. So we are trying to bridge these two at the same time.
And you're using public opinion surveys, you do polls and things to find out where the public is at the moment and where they want to go together?
Absolutely. It was one of its kind of first local poll we just done recently. Quite overwhelming numbers are coming in. We are still running the program for a month or so. The idea is to see where are our community is. Obviously, we were targeting more youth because our focus was mainly youth in the community. And now we thought we should move one step ahead, bringing whole of the community together, so that we need to see where are they now. I mean, we have seen a lot of surveys done in the US and people's mind about climate change in the United States, et cetera, et cetera. These were all our inspiration to see where are we as people of Qatar. So we started working on building this survey to see where our people and community and all the residents and citizens of Qatar's beliefs on climate change.
So you, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I would love for you to share with us, because you said there are positive things happening that the youth are doing that are not very well documented, and we'd like to document that so that other people can hear and learn. And at the same time, also, before we end our conversation a little later, I want to make sure we touch on not only that, but also you mentioned we want to live minimalistically, and so are we looking at potentially living without certain things, or is it maybe that we might not need certain things? So we'll be having that conversation with our guest Nishad Shafi when we return, and continuing that conversation. And then a little later on in the show, we're going to have our Ask Dorothy segment, and then we are joined by the band Mantra Americana, all on the Life Changes show right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They're dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe. Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence. nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi meditation. Phi meditation helps you harness the power of I am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi beads at phibeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, beads.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back. We're having a conversation with our interview guest, environmentalist and policy-oriented social change advocate from Qatar, Nishad Shafi. And by the way, we know it's a time difference, and so thank you for coming on and sharing with us here in America. You, as you and I spoke, you shared some interesting things, and actually where I want to start is the minimalistic part. What do you mean by that, and is that going to be okay?
Well, I mean, this is what how young people are feeling at the moment. The fact was, when it comes to fashion and food, was overconsumption and the waste. The clothing we buy was for just a season, and they were thrown into dump. Now people are more understandably not to go for fast fashion and look at ways to give back to community through some government-supported places where you can give back some of the clothing you don't require. And there, even we started having Saturday clothes exchange programs where people can exchange clothes for no money. People are starting to go more vegan. We now have more vegan options. Some of the time, like 1 year, 2 years back, you cannot even imagine our Fridays or Saturdays without meat consumption, because that's something very culturally connected to us, you know, having red meats on Friday after our prayers, which is significant our holiday. So that sort of sentiments are changing. And who are leading this? Young people. The younger generation are more eco-conscious. What they buy, even traveling, they're offsetting their traveling emissions. This is something young people are trying to build. And I think that's the change we see from the region. And these are getting common and common. And I can bet 99% are young people who are doing this sort of actions.
So you actually answered in part already the question before about some of the positive things that the youth are doing. And so are they hopeful, in your opinion, and as you're experiencing them as part of your organization, or are they resentful? Like, how are they feeling about these changes?
I mean, Filippo, they've been always hopeful. I mean, I'm just telling you some of the results, which is not yet out from the survey poll. The people are very optimistic. One of our final questions is that, do you think we can combat climate change and live a very sustainable life? 90% of age between 15 to 25 said yes. I mean, this is what I've been seeing too. And I'm just sharing some of the results, which is not yet published. Probably by the time this podcast goes out, the results will be out. So it is predominantly young people who feel they're very, very optimistic about the future in this part of the world.
How do they feel about America?
Well, we didn't have a question on that. But
because I'm thinking we're all together, right, in this, yeah, and absolutely. So we need to collaborate. So do they feel like they can collaborate? Well, obviously, because you're on the show, but that we could do this together. No?
No. We partner with many of the young people, youth organizations in the United States. I mean, they're also very hopeful. Some of the results from the United States, by some of the study by Pew Center, also says that predominantly young people in the United States believe that they can fight for climate action, and they're seeing their countries changing towards that. So it's an optimistic view from the United States too. And hopefully we will be meeting many of the young people during UN General Assembly in New York later in September. So we keep collaborating. We look at, you know, sharing space with our contemporary youth in the United States. And I think both are feeling optimistic. And I mean, that's what young people are all about, you know, feeling optimistic, work for that. You know, optimism doesn't just come because we're working on that. And we feel that positive things will do arrive, even though it's late.
Glad to hear that. And so let's talk just a couple more things that you address so well. Energy transition, and you already talked a little bit about sustainability issues, but if you want to elaborate more before we conclude our conversation, it seems important.
Absolutely, Filippo. You would not imagine these countries, which are predominantly petrochemical-based economy, announcing their net zero targets. I mean, out of the five big oil gas countries in the Gulf have announced their net zero target for 2060, which I personally wouldn't have imagined 2 years back. It just happened a year and a half back. So the countries realize how much important that reducing their emission and making sure they have a blueprint for businesses beyond oil and gas. And the region really requires a transition to net zero. This is not just for the business, but also for economic point of view. And they need to change their current business model over the next decade. And they're doing that. I mean, incremental change in efforts can be seen. I mean, since the UN Climate Summit happened last year in November in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt, and this year in Dubai in United Arab Emirates, are just some of the glimpses you can see from the region is predominantly not only working towards their emission reduction targets, but also want to be leaders. This is the leadership. And I think the region want to be leaders, demonstrating their greater commitment than usual. Unlike in the past, these countries have been always said they are blocking many of the climate discussion because they still want to stay on business as usual or getting the economy running on fossil fuel-based economies. But that has been changing. And the region, regional governments and the businesses are now want to be the leaders in climate action and make sure that their economies survive and they have the just energy transition take place like elsewhere. And I think this is something, a huge change from what used to be, from government point of view, the mentalities have been completely changed. I think that shows how the region perceives environment and climate impact as severe economic and also impacts on their citizens. So I think moving forward, this realization has given them a sort of extra power to move an extra mile. And that has been visible in all their recent announcement to increase their renewables, reduce their emissions, net zero targets, etc.
Nishad, thank you for all of that. And I'd like to conclude our time together with a question that brings us back to the Islamic faith. Is part of the faith and maybe part of the mission here that the planet is a sacred place or given to us by a higher power and it's we shouldn't destroy it. I mean, is that part of the faith?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a believer of Islam, most of the people do understand one of the significant paragraph in the Quran is that every individual is a steward of the planet. I mean, It doesn't specify Muslims or Islam. It said every individual on this planet is a steward, and they have been assigned by the God himself. So we believe in that, and we push that. Now, definitely, people of Islamic faith, every faith has this responsibility. And we think it is a collective responsibility. And that's why we look at, being that steward. As a younger generation, we feel we are more obliged to be that steward to save a planet which we will be living in the coming decades.
Well, very good. If you're interested in learning more about Nishad Shafi, you can go to nishad.com, NEESHAD.com. And his organization, of which he is the co-founder and executive director, Arab Youth Climate Movement Qatar, you could find information at AYCMQatar. That's QATAR.org. And we have those links for Nishad at Life Changes Show on the page there, and more information about him as well. Nishad, thank you for coming on with us and sharing. It's a pleasure, and it's been a pleasure getting to know you in the conversations that we've had. And it feels like a part of the world is closer, I hope, for all of us.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really honored. I mean, thank you for having me here. It's always good to share the perspective. And at the end of the day, we understand the bottom line is we are all connected in this. You know, maybe we are working from other part of the world, known for many other things at the same time. Some of the things we are working is for the common planet. And what better way to connect to a podcast like this? And I think this is a really a good way of connecting to other part of the world.
Indeed. And when we spoke, we were talking about whether I'd been to Qatar or not. And I have not, but it is on one of my lists of things to do. So potentially, maybe we'll meet at some point. Thank you so much, Nishad Shafi, for being with us here on the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo. And like we say here, inshallah, we will look forward to see you here in Doha in Qatar.
Nice. Thank you. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Marcia in North Carolina, and I need your help. Long ago, you told me that happiness is a choice, and I want to know how anyone can choose happy in today's world. There is so much drama and trauma going on all over the world, and I am devastated by all of it. Please help me understand how to choose happy under these circumstances.
Dear Marcia, yes, there is much trauma and drama all around us. This is indeed the time of revelations, and so much hidden truth is being revealed. And once we choose to see that these truths can lead us into making better choices in the future, then we can co-create a new and better world. I urge you to spend more time looking for the good in today's world, as there is so much to be happy about. There are many spiritual groups of people who gather weekly to share the wonderful things that they are involved with. A simple search on the internet will show you many such groups. I found several near you and know that you can find one that resonates with you. If none appeal to you, you can always create one. Gathering with like-minded people who focus on the good will not only assist you in finding happiness, but it will also help you assist others find happiness too.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guest, the band Mantra Americana, on the Life Changes Show at Home Edition when we come back after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes Show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audiovisual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorotheyDonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
Continuing the conversation with about collaboration and culture and moving it forward together, here we have a performance guest that does that. Actually, it's a group called Mantra Americana. And so that's made up of at least the three that we have with us here today: Grammy-nominated recording artist Dave Stringer, percussionist Patrick Ritchie, and American-born Jamaican Puerto Rican singer-songwriter Tulsi Bloom. Welcome, all of you, and welcome Mantra Americana to the Life Changes Show. Dave, you are one of the ringleaders here, and was I quoted you at the beginning of the show saying that you've worked solo for so many years, and you now it's all about collaboration. And in a sense, what we've been talking about on the show is like, yeah, we've kind of all gone solo in so many ways. Each country has done its own thing, and all, and now collectively and culturally, we could bring all of the aspects of ourselves into what we want next for our future and for the generations to come. And you're building that musically.
Yeah, which is really the roots of kirtan, a method of call and response chanting that came out of India really in the 15th century, around the same time the Reformation was happening in Europe. It's a collaborative process from the get-go, because it involves not a performance per se, but we're getting the audience to respond with us. So it all happens call and response. We sing and the crowd sings back. So it blurs the distinction utterly between artist and audience. And it's a highly ecstatic form of music that that basically says that we're all in this together, that my ecstasy affects your ecstasy, that ecstasy is contagious. So when we create an ecstatic ritual, this feeling together, it radiates out into the world in a big way. Even though for 20 years my name was on the poster, it was always a collaborative process. What's happening in real time involves us listening to each other really intently and being influenced by one another. I've always said I'm only as good as my drummer and the other musicians around me. And so we are, you know, sometimes people are like, you must rehearse all the time. And we're like, no, actually never. We've just cultivated an intense process of listening to one another and respecting one another's ideas, which also changed by what the crowd does. So inherently, our form of music is collaborative. And I've always tried to play with musicians that I thought were actually better than me so that I could learn. Emphatically though, this project, Mantra Americana, is collaborative in another way, culturally. It's coming out of Indian roots, but it's bearing American fruit, essentially. We're all Americans, but we all spent various time in India and in the culture of yoga and yoga philosophy, and have been deeply influenced by it, but we're not trying to be Indian. This has become a worldwide cultural phenomena. Kirtans are happening in living rooms and yoga studios and concert stages really all over the world, but particularly in America, and we have incorporated sounds into it that reflect our own experience in the ecstatic vocal and instrumental traditions in America, like gospel and bluegrass. So what you've got are melodies derived from Indian ragas with chord structures and ecstatic harmonies, you know, from Americana. So you can call it country and Eastern music if you like, but it's authentic to us. And it represents a real collaboration between Indian culture and an American culture. It's not appropriative. It's actually just doing what the music always did from the beginning, incorporating influences in and trying to create music that relates to the audience so that, you know, people will sing back. It really speaks to the indwelling presence of love or the divine or consciousness in all. And so in that way, it says that consciousness itself is deeply collaborative, that it's reflective of a big mind.
And actually, we're going to hear a piece in just a moment from Mantra Americana, but it's going to be from Mantra Americana 2, which is going to be released later this month. So that's exciting. And so before we get into that piece, you say it's like a series. So Mantra Americana started something and then it evolved into Mantra Americana 2, and we're going to be expecting 3 and 4. So tell us about the series before we hear this piece.
Well, the primary collaboration in the inception of this is with a singer, Madi Das, that he and I wrote the songs together. So there's that collaboration as well. He's the primary singer on the first song that you'll hear. Tulsi and I sing in the quartet of response singers, although I also play a lot of the instruments, and Patrick is the architect of the grooves underneath it. The series is that there's a lot of other voices in this. As if you call it season, we're in season 2 now. In season 3, Madi steps back a little bit into the choir, and Tulsi and I step forward, and we become the lead singers. Patrick remains as the Groovemeister and mastermind of all of that throughout. But it allows us also to create a much larger family. There are a lot of people within this sort of larger umbrella of Mantra Americana. And so as the series develops, you'll see more guest artists. For example, we have Greg Liege, who's a very, very well-known dobro and pedal steel player, who's become part of the band now, and there'll be a lot of other people in the future. So a song that you're about to play, Tom Pranamami, basically celebrates singing and dancing as the golden path to experience a consciousness that transcends the body.
Oh, well, let's experience that. So this is the pre-recorded song from Mantra Americana 2. Here is Tom Pranamami. We will be hearing a snippet of it, and then we'll be back to talk with Patrick and Tulsi. Let's hear this on the Life Changes show now.
Ujjwalavarana Gauravaradeham Vilasita Niravadi Bhavavideham Tribhuvana Pavana Kripaya Lesam Tam Pranamami Cha Shri Sachitanayam 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 Pranamami cha Shri Sachitanaya
Gaura Hari 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 Gaura Hari 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 Gaura Hari 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 Gaura Hari
Gaura Hari 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 Gaura Hari 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 Gaura Hari 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 Gaura Hari Krishna Chaitanya Chaitanya, Krishna Chaitanya, Shri Mahaprabhu.
Krishna Chaitanya, Krishna Chaitanya, Krishna Chaitanya,
Shri Mahaprabhu. Vigalita Nayana, Kamala Jaladharam, Bhusana Navarasa. Bhava Vikara,
yati yati mantara nritya vilasam tam pranamami cha shri sachitanaya tam pranamami cha shri sachitanaya tam pranamami cha shri sachitanaya Chaitanya, Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Mahaprabhu. Krishna Chaitanya, Krishna Chaitanya, Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that unless somebody has heard Mantra Americana 1, that we haven't heard anything like this before. So congrats to all of you. If you're liking what you're hearing, mantraamericana.org, just like it sounds. And we have other links on the pages for Dave and for Patrick and Tulsi. Now, Patrick, when I was talking to Dave about the collaborative process in the studio, he said, if I understood him correctly, it really all begins with the percussions. Tell me about that.
Well, it really does, because the rhythms of India and, you know, eventually the rhythms that we have here in the United States and in other places that are embracing Indian music, they share a lot in common. And really, when you're in this style of music, it is very much driven by, it's funny, we're talking about how important the drums are, but from the drummer's standpoint, listening to the melodic and poetic phrasing, thinking like a singer is the best way to be a drummer in this genre of music, from my opinion. So it's really feeling and listening to the mantra and the way those phrases can best support the emotion of the lyric. So from a drummer standpoint, if you're focused on that, then that means you're supporting the overall movement of the piece. So that's kind of the foundation for me.
Well, Patrick, interesting when you said thinking like a singer. Before you said singer, I thought you were going to say dancer, because I was feeling like, wow, this is a mantra we could dance to.
Absolutely. And when you go to one of our performances or sessions, or many other artists in this genre who are exploring this type of music, you do see people dancing and just really feeling something that you don't get a chance to feel in a lot of other parts of our modern society. And you do see people sitting down cross-legged and they're swaying and feeling it. It's like they're dancing while they're sitting. So it's definitely a style of music that has historically been influenced by, dance has certainly been, especially in India, tied to the origins of this music. And as we start to collaborate and bring in elements of other musical styles, it just falls so naturally that rhythms that would support dance and other types of music translate very nicely into kirtan and mantra americana.
So then the rhythms, the Eastern tabula and the Western drumming come together in this.
Absolutely. That's kind of what I consider myself to be a specialist in. I studied Indian classical music for years, both in India and in California, with many master teachers that have really shared a beautiful part of their tradition with me. And I was coming at that as a jazz drummer and orchestral percussionist, playing in orchestras and percussion ensembles and exploring, rhythm through many different types of instruments. And I, in college, I got a research grant to go live in India. So while all my friends were off at the beach drinking, I was this, one kid who said, I'll do this research trip and I'm going to fly to India. So I spent a summer there and eventually met several masters, and over the years have been going back to glean as much as I can from them. And, coming at this as a percussionist from a different tradition, really, it's a very humbling process, because you're basically fully trained in one tradition, and then you're coming at something new, and you really have to start from the beginning and be open to that. So, collaboration is one of our biggest themes that we talk about. And it really is like learning a language. And oftentimes we hear people say, oh, music is a universal language. Well, it is, but you have to start kind of from what your background is, and find ways to sort of merge elements in that are kind of respectful of each other. So that's when I play on one song, if I play tabla and drum set, I'm playing tabla like a drum set player, and I play drum set like a tabla player. So I'm able to create that space that's so unique to Indian rhythms, to leave space for the mantra and for the poetry and melody.
What a great segue to introduce Tulsi to this. Thank you, Patrick. Because American-born, Jamaican, Puerto Rican singer-songwriter, and now mantra singer. Tell us, it sounds fascinating. How might this have happened, Tulsi?
Oh my goodness. I know, where do I start? Oh, Lord have mercy. I was born into the bhakti yoga tradition, which is basically devotional yoga. In devotional yoga, there's a lot of mantra chanting and a lot of mantras to learn. And what is mantra? Mantra is something to invoke, a specific mood or sentiment within the mind. Obviously, if I'm practicing it for my devotional practice or spiritual practice, I'm chanting for the reason of, evolving, to my higher self and consciousness in that regard. One thing I do want to say about these mantras is that you do not have to know it's an ancient Sanskrit language. You do not have to know what it means for it to take effect on the body. Different sound frequencies have different effects on the body. This is scientific. It's just science. It's just black and white, a fact. And so the Sanskrit language also has an effect to elevate our consciousness, raise our consciousness. It's basically like meditating without having to really do the work. All you got to do is hear it. And that's what's so beautiful about Mantra Americana, in the sense that you can just enjoy listening to the mantras while listening to a music that is familiar to you, especially Westerners, it's coming from India with, Indian music, where it's being presented with Western music now. And to be recognized this way, at the Grammys and stuff is really beautiful. For me, this is, my spiritual practice. And so but I'm also a musician as well. So I do the same thing. I sing it in the temple and I sing it out of the temple. So that's kind of what this is. Yeah.
Well, as Dave was saying, it sounds like this is a series. Well, it's a new genre, I think. And so how do you see this genre evolving, or mantra evolving, for us in this country, especially?
Wow, that is a phenomenal question. because for me, it's like it's been around forever, and it's just a beautiful thing. It's like I just think it's so beautiful, like the whole band, especially like Dave and Madi, putting this together and really just trying to share this with more people, because I feel like now more than ever, people need solace. People need peace. People need to, you know, be able to sit with themselves and not go crazy, you know. There's so many things, you know, like that can be conjured up in the mind, like our thoughts. In Bhakti Yoga tradition, it talks about like the three, you know, miseries just by being a human being in this existence, being the things that, you know, the things that affect us from our environment, the things that affect us from other people, other living entities or animals or whatever, and the things that bother us from our own mind. Okay, so even our own mind can affect us, you know, depression, this and this and that. So mantra is one of the modalities that can help with this tremendously. One of the singers, Dave Stringer's niece, Allie, you know, she deals with it. She does, occupational therapy for families. And, you know, she uses the chants for therapy, you know, and you know, helping people to, you know, clear their mind and, you know, heal themselves in this way. So mental health, well-being, it's all there, you know? So, I mean, why wouldn't, like, anyone want to experience that?
Or, why, you know, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know? I mean, this is the world, you know, that we all dwell in, and, you know, Dave and whatever, for many, many years. And we know because we experience it, you know? And it's something that, you know, you're talking about the future. I mean, you know, this is just the beginning, you know? It's like being recognized at the Grammys. Okay, chant is being recognized. So it's clear that this is doing something for people in a positive way, that that it's being recognized finally. So it's beautiful, and I'm excited about it too.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you for doing what you're doing in a positive way. And now we're going to get to hear you take the lead, Tulsi, along with Dave Stringer. And here is a portion of the pre-recorded piece. Actually, this isn't even from this is probably a world premiere, actually, because I think this is part of the album after the one that is coming out.
Yeah, this is from series 3, I guess.
Series 3. Okay. Well, this is exciting. Well, here, never heard before on radio. Here is a portion of the Mantra Americana performing Bhagavati
Sarasvati. It refers to Sarasvati is it refers to like how creative processes begin. How does something come out of nothing? How is there a world at all? Yoga says all is consciousness, and all arises from consciousness and returns to it. So that's not something to believe. It's something that we hope that in listening to this music or participating in it, you can experience.
And we're going to experience it right now. Bhagavati Sarasvati on the Life Changes Show.
Yeah. Bhagavati.
Tulsi, you just couldn't help yourself, huh? You just...
I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was on
you
mute.
You got a single. Like,
oh my God. Oops. Oh no. Did I, like,
that was precious. Me? That was precious. Mantra Americana. Find them at mantraamericana.org. With a big thank you to Dave Stringer, Patrick Ritchie, and Tulsi Bloom for bringing this music and bringing this music to the Life Changes show. Thank you so much. I understand a couple of you are in Los Angeles, and when I'm there, I look forward to getting to connect and seeing you all perform live.
Hopefully soon. Grammy season is upon us, so we're starting to put together some shows, and especially in the next year, we'll be out and about quite a bit. So
very good. Well, with that, a big thank you again to Mantra Americana, Dave Stringer, Patrick Ritchie, and Tulsi Bloom, and all the best to you all. And a big thank you once again to Nishad Shafi, and all the best to him. And that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Leisure, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.